Welcome everybody to another episode of Lonely
What's up, guys?
Wrist.
Lonely
Justin
Wrist
is back.
Hey,
Justin is back. We
duty
always
called, man.
Claps. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Duty called, and not the bathroom one. So work related.
Today we have a very, very, very special guest coming from Germany, hailing from Germany. Stern Glass, Kayvon, welcome, brother.
Thank you for having me, guys. It's a pleasure to talk with you today here in the podcast about my work and the company.
This has been a long time coming for us because, so ironically, Justin and I got into watch collecting together. I don't know if we ever told the story. And I was like really stoked on like big brands. Like I was like obsessed with Panerai, and like, you know, like we would buy these like weird little like homage watches that were like not even close to what we really wanted, and and Justin kind of went down the Bauhaus like rabbit hole, and of course when you go down that rabbit hole, you guys are at the top of the rabbit hole, you know, like you Nomos and Stern Glass and things like that, right? So very quickly, Justin found your brand, and then he just started buying up watches. And and so for a long time, we wanted to have you guys on. And, you know, it's hard to get a hold of you guys in the weirdest way.
Nice that it worked out today.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at the higher level, at the lower level, you know, obviously, you know, for support and stuff like that. But reaching decision makers that can get this to happen is not as easy. So welcome and thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
I am curious for you to tell us, of course, about the inception of the brand. You know, obviously I know Dustin kind of, I've read some of the backstory on how he was working at a watchmaker and, you know, decided to kind of do his own thing and fill in some of the gaps for our listeners.
Yeah, sure. The founder, Dustin, my chef, founded the company in 2016 with a Kickstarter campaign. He ignited his passion for wristwatches back when he was 16 years old. And he did an internship at the German brand Meistersinger, who are famous for their one-hand watches. And he made the strap change, the packaging, and all that kind of stuff. But back then, the problem for him was that he, as a young student, could not afford these kind of watches because they were expensive and you need money to buy them. And with 20 years old, he asked himself if there could be a way to produce beautiful watches in a good quality for an accessible price. But back then, he did not have the courage to do it and started to work as a freelance web developer. And that was around the time in 2012 where brands like Daniel Wellington and Movement took off with the social media marketing and could prove that you can start a brand from scratch and become successful. So he took all his courage and did a Kickstarter campaign in 2016 where he collected $17,000 to produce the first watch with the first watch badge, which was back then a quartz model. And 2 years later, he did another campaign where we released our first automatic model, the Naos, still our bestseller today. And yeah, that's how it all got started back then. And what I can also tell is that in 2019, we started also to sell our watches at retail. The former retail director of the Spanish Festina Group, he was the retail director in Germany, joined our team because he liked our brand and that we are a young, dynamic team and has the knowledge and the connections for us that to place our watches at smaller jewelers and goldsmiths. And we are also available, I think, worldwide in over 400 shops where you can see and try on our watches.
Wow.
That's amazing. I actually didn't know you guys had such a large footprint like in the market like that. Like I've always kind of thought of you guys as a generally online store, as which a lot of, you know, startups and micro brands kind of start as. That's really impressive for you guys to be in that many locations. So good for you guys.
Thank you.
And that's amazing. I didn't know Dustin was 16 when he started the company. That's super cool, man. I mean, he was like still in school.
And he did the internship when he was 16. I think when he founded the company, he was 27 years old.
Oh, gotcha, gotcha.
Okay. Yeah, it was took like, some time when he took the courage to do
child prodigy here.
Yeah, my mistake, everybody. No, I was like, dude, that's like crazy. Like, how did he do that? I can't even tie my shoes, you know, at 16 years old, but cool. Well, that's amazing. I'll go into the next question for you, man. So what aspects of the Bauhaus design do you find most compelling? And how did they influence the inspiration of Sternglass's designs?
Yeah, I mean, for us, the Bauhaus design, it's not a certain look, but also a philosophy. Back then, when the Bauhaus was invented, the School of Bauhaus, the goal was to produce functional products at an affordable price. And when you look today at these design classics, they are still beautiful, still functional, but really expensive. They became design objects that people want to show off or something. And that was something that we tried to implement in our brand DNA. That's not only about the looks, but also about the ethics that we want to show with our products. And that means, of course, that you have this, I don't want to say minimal approach, but less is more approach to product design and to produce the watches in a good quality. But what does good quality mean for us? We have some standards for our watches, for example, that almost every watch that we have in our portfolio has a domed sapphire crystal with anti-reflective coating, 5 ATM water resistance, so you don't have to worry when it's raining and when you're washing your hands, screw-down case backs. It depends on the watch type, but either it's screw-down or has 4 screws in it. And of course, quick release straps, so the customers can change the look of the watch in less than 20 seconds. That's what's important for us.
Beyond that, when it comes to the design approach, what do you guys prioritize when it comes to design? Like, is it obviously Bauhaus? I mean, I put together an article about it. We're getting ready to drop it. But it really talks about form following function, you know, minimalism, simplicity, functionality, practicality. You know, how is that something that you guys incorporate and consider when designing watches? I know that sounds like a really loaded question, but there's got to be a philosophy that you guys have that you consider whenever you're assembling and designing a watch, right? So.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in the end, a good watch design is all about details. We usually start off with the dial design because that's the most important part of the watch. And it's all about proportion, of course, that you look which kind of hands and dial works for the look that we want to achieve. And then you put that in a case, of course, with the strap, but what we like to do, for example, for our editions, we think in the design process that's not only about the dial, but about whole other details as well. Our most recent model is, for example, the Naos Edition Bauhaus 3 with a black PVD case. And for us, it was important to show strong contrast, like with the black case, the white dial. And of course, to implement customer feedback that we collected over the years. For example, we implemented the Bauhaus stylistic forms, the triangle, circle, and rectangular, and put Luminova dots on the dial for better readability to underline the functionality of the watch. But also for storytelling, we took some details of the Bauhaus building in Dessau. It has this famous red door, for example, and we framed the date window in red to have this connection with it. And also, when you look at the case bag, we put the school plan on it. So we try to push with each release new technologies. So it's the first time that we engraved and painted the case bag in these fine lines, for example. And last but not least, also the strap. It's an integral part of the watch. I mean, we always look at the case, at the dial, but we thought, what could we do to underline this Bauhaus concept? And we embossed the strap with a geometrical pattern on it. It was also a first time for us. So to answer the question, I think we tried to innovate in the design details in our watches with every new release that we make, both from an aesthetical and from a technical perspective.
That was one of the first things that I noticed with that new watch, the Neos Bauhaus 3, was the strap. And I'm happy that you mentioned that too, because I felt like that was the first time that you guys had done that. And I think that it was really tastefully done. It's a very like refreshing take on a leather strap. So kudos to you guys for that.
Thank you.
I'm curious. And so obviously one of your core principles for the brand is obtainability. You know, you guys want to make a watch that everybody can afford. Hopefully everybody, right? So, and it seems like that's rung true, you know, because you see a lot of micro brands that start off with that approach, or they're like, hey, we want to make affordability is huge for us, right? But then you slowly see them roll into, you know, creating higher priced watches. And it seems like you guys haven't done that for as long as you guys have been around. Is that something that your fans can expect for maybe somebody who's looking for a little more, or is it just going to be 100% affordability, you know, moving forward, you know?
Yeah, this is an interesting question. I mean, in our foundation, we said that we want to make watches that are accessible for our customers. For example, our base bestseller now, Quartz, starts at $269, and we want to stay definitely at this price level to introduce new customers to the brand. But also, we try to implement better technologies, more details into watches that maybe are priced a little bit higher, between 500, 700 euro, because we realized over the years that people are asking for it. Like every time a customer buys a watch from us, we send them a post-purchase survey when they can give us the feedback. And we received a lot of feedback. The customer wishes better movement options, more straps, and Luminova bigger numerals. And for me, it's really I'm really lucky that we have this kind of feedback, because every 2 weeks I read this and realize, wow, we should invest in this direction to even create a better watch for our customers. So I think you can expect that we will go upwards with the price for certain models, but we always will release limited editions or also new watches under $300, for example. And our approach is also not to exclude anyone, because we try to release watches also in quartz and automatic. This is, I think, something that's different from other brands, that our bestsellers are available both in quartz and automatic. So someone who has a tighter budget can choose the quartz and have all the advantages of it. And the enthusiast who is maybe more into the mechanical stuff can choose to go the automatic way.
I'm happy. Go ahead, Blake. Sorry.
Oh, I just said, sorry. I had another nerdy follow-up, but, I obviously, when we talked, I told you I focus more on on the bigger box brands, and Mr. Summers here is the specialist when it comes to the micro stuff. But I haven't seen anything from you guys, and I could be wrong, that is housing like a Swiss movement.
The Canton.
The Canton? Is it STP? Is that what it is, right?
Yeah, the Canton was an interesting watch for us because it was our first Swiss-made watch with a STP movement. I think the first version was released in 2020, but we had some problems with the movement. The failure rate was pretty high, so we took it off and re-released the watch with a Zelita SW200 movement. And it was around $900, I think. I know exactly the price. But currently it's sold out because we want to rethink this concept of a watch with a Swiss movement, or to put it in other words, watches with better movements. What you can expect from us is that we will release more watches with the Miyota 99,000 series, especially the movement with the GMT is really interesting also for us, but also a new watch with a Swiss movement. But I think that's something for 2025. For example, one month ago at a watch fair in Munich, the Inagenta Jewelry and Watches Fair, and there were also different movement companies there, for example, La Jouperet, Miyota, Soprot, and I saw really interesting options for movements that I think our customers would appreciate that we put them in our watches.
We see a lot of micro brands using La Jouperet because of that extended power reserve. I mean, you have a lot of options there, a lot of great kind of pop-in options, you know. They fit the same cases as an ETA or Sellita SW200. I mean, it makes it easy for you guys just to be like, okay, here's the design, here's the movement holder, boom, let's just pop in whatever movement
we want. Then people see like a 68 power reserve compared to like a 44, and they're like, wow, like I can get a full another day out of this.
The new movements are amazing. So I saw the La Jouperet in person, and the different finishing options you also have. Or for example, I don't know if you know the Soprot movement we brand. Do. It's part of the Festina group. They have a movement called the Newton with the double bridge balance. And I was like, wow, totally blown away by it. And what we can imagine to do if we release a new watch with a Swiss movement, that you have an upgrade option. For example, the base version where we use the SW200 from Sellita, and you pay a little bit more, that you have maybe the La Jouperet or the Soprot Newton inside it. So that we can offer both customer, maybe the one who just wants the basic Sellita movement, or the enthusiasts who are like, I want to go all in with the extended power reserve, more finishing, that we offer both options to the customer.
So, awesome. Something that I've noticed, and this wasn't on our list, but I'm just getting so excited as I talk to you more. So these ideas keep, you know, like forming in my brain. But I'm a huge fan of German watches. Justin is a huge fan of German watches. And something like a trending pattern that I've noticed around German watches, but I haven't noticed from you, not to call you out publicly, but it's all in good fun, is you get a lot of customization. So, for example, I don't want to name other watch brand names unless you give me permission to, but because this is your podcast, but you know, you can go in there and be like, hey, I want the movement decorated like this. I want, an exhibition case back, and I want, these configurations of the dial. And like, I mean, I'm sure, you know exactly what I'm talking about, but that's something that you really only see from the German watchmakers, right? Like, no American watchmakers, no Swiss watchmakers are like, hey, look, here's what you get. You buy it. This is what you pay for. You don't ask me for anything else. You know, get out of my face and don't ever buy a watch again, you know? But you guys, you know, I haven't seen that from you, you know, and it seems like the German market is a very mature watch market for those reasons that they want something special, something unique, and they want to feel like they have a sense of influence in the product.
Yeah, absolutely. You're totally right. We have, I think, a different approach to it because we release limited editions of our best sellers and try to give our customers a piece that is limited, usually to 1,000 to 2,000 pieces. And also individual, in the case of certain color types and case back engravings. But when I started at the company, I was also in charge of the web design. And one thing that I noticed was that back then we offered our watches just with one strap. And I was like, can we change that? Or is there a possibility that the customers can choose? Maybe he doesn't like the Milanese strap on the blue watch dial, or he wants a brown strap on the black dial, for example, and it was not possible. So I redesigned the whole product page and the process behind it so that we have the technology to offer this kind of process internally in our company, because at that moment, when you try to offer more option, it makes it more complex and you have to operate with different teams in the company, and that everything works correctly, that someone doesn't get the wrong strap or wrong customization options. What we do is that we offer, at least here in Germany, at some retailers, that we send them a blank case back, and the jeweler can engrave it at the store from them. But right now, for us, it's a bit complicated in our development process to offer this kind of individuality. But today, you can choose different strap options, which was really important for me, because it could be possible that someone doesn't like leather skin on his arm and prefers nylon straps, metal straps, whatever. And this is something we changed in the last months.
That was going to kind of bring me into the... Sorry, Blake, if you want to go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that that's important. And I'm glad that you pushed for that.
Yeah.
We love our straps.
And I was going to tell you as well, Kayvon, and to kind of go back on what you were saying, Blake, is, yeah, I mean, I feel like it's this thing where, like, the German industry has, you know, all these options for customization. But like Kayvon had said, they do release a lot of these different models in different customization styles, different case back, different straps. You know, all these things can help change the identity of a watch, you know, drastically. Yeah. You know, for instance, you know, the watch I'm wearing, the Custa, this has, you know, this really beautiful, like, seagull on it, like a bird, or whatever it is. I don't know what type of bird it is. And it's got these little wind things and everything. But for me, I'm a big beach person. I love the ocean. I love anything that's nautical. So as soon as I saw that, that was like a click in my brain. I'm like, that's exactly what I want. Like, that was the customization that I needed to push me into purchasing that watch. Cause, you know, yeah, sure. You know, can I come in and be like, oh, can you do this and that? Whatever, doesn't matter. But it shows that they are still, you know, kind of listening and doing these small customizations to different models to kind of fill the market.
I also
love that you guys do, you know, you'll use the same model, for instance, the Naus, and you'll put it in an automatic as well as a quartz, because like you said, Kayvon, you know, somebody who is, you know, maybe scared of an automatic movement, or maybe they're a little bit more, you know, budget oriented, they would want a quartz movement compared to a watch aficionado who's going to instantly go for the automatic. So you still get that personality, the styling of the watch and the quality, but you're just kind of able to choose between that. And that'll kind of segue me into the next question for you. And we kind of touched on this a little bit, but what has been, you know, some of the biggest challenges in a market that's filled with such diverse watch styles?
Yes, I mean, we live in tough economic times. We, for example, with the inflation and war, and I also noticed in the industry, especially at this price point, that you have a lot of threats. People don't have that much income that they can spend on watches, for example, or the threat of the smartwatch, especially at the price range under $500. The funny thing is that back then, some jewelers said to us that the price range around $500 to $1,000 is dead, because above is the luxury segment and under is the cheap watches. But what I noticed is that so many brands got upmarket that there's room left for us that we fill in. And when you come there with something unique, for example, you mentioned our editions. This is also something that surprised us, because the first editions we made were really basic black and white, strong contrast, that what you would expect from Bauhaus, from this minimalism. But what we did is to combine these styles, this style, and put a color touch into it. And so created this unique identity for us. And we realized that our customers really appreciate that and see our sales growing. And this is what makes us happy, of course, and our customers as well.
I have to come out on the record and say that, you know, when we were going back and forth through email, and I was like, let me look at, you know, the Stern Glass portfolio. And I just love the Naus and that yellow. Like, I saw some pictures of it online, and I was just like, this is so good. Like,
yeah, and this is a perfect sound.
There's a balance, right? And we've talked about this, Justin and I, before, but like, you can go so far away from your values, like, while having fun, you know, like, you can be like, oh, well, let me put like a light blue dial, let me put a pink sub dial, let me put, you know, a green bezel, right? I mean, obviously I'm not a designer, so that would be the worst watch ever, but but, you know, people can stray away from that while they're having fun making watches. But at the core foundation of it, there has to be a balance, because you can go down that rabbit hole and then you make a watch that's not very wearable, right? Like, or you can stick close to those values. And I always think a watch should be wearable. And you see a lot of watch brands making watches that aren't wearable, which is the exact opposite of what you would expect from the industry. So
definitely
another clap, I mean, for you guys on that one.
Thank you very much. I mean, in the end, it depends what your approach is. I mean, if you're a watch brand that is more jewelry driven, where the watch is more kind of a sculpture and time telling is not the most important thing. What comes to my mind is, for example, MB&F. These are really sculptured watches. So for us, it's of course important that we stay at some base and our base design core, but maybe to put a bit fun twist to it. And I tell always my close friends, when I show them our newest watches, that these type of watches are too colorful for them, but they're always driven to the white and the black dial. And of course, the white and silver dials are our best sellers. And for someone who starts getting into watches, it's totally normal to get a watch that is suitable for every occasion. But when you get your third, your fourth, your fifth watch, you want to see some color to express your personality or your mood that you are in. And then when the fun, then is that when the fun starts.
Yeah, that yellow is insane. Sorry, just to touch on that, man. I was looking at that one in particular, and I'm a very colorful watch guy. I like to show my personality on my wrist, as if I don't already have enough, you know, if you talk to me. But yeah, I saw the yellow and I was just thinking, man, like, I would never buy a yellow watch in my life. And then I looked at that one and I was like, bro, like that one is fire. Like it's so accessible. Like I feel like I'd be able to wear that with anything. And like you said, like a very good, like summertime watch as well. But anyways, I just wanted to say that.
I've unloaded a lot of watches. Not a lot, but I've unloaded certain watches for that reason. Like I had an orange dial watch and you know, you can't, you know, you talked about straps and versatility, you know, like orange doesn't have a lot of versatility, you know, and I get why orange watches exist for the most part, you know, mostly in the diving community because they're the last color that can visibly be seen by the naked eye. But once you get a watch like that, an orange watch, you know, you'll realize how hard it is to wear, in my opinion, right? But this is a perfect segue and to fun, right? And you had sent us, by the time people listen to this, this will be past March 25th, but you have chosen to share with us in advance the new Lumatic, the Sternglass Lumatic with this beautiful blue dial and surprisingly very interesting contrast. Tell us about, and you're the designer, so we're lucky enough to have you sitting here.
So, yeah, sure, I can tell you about the Lumatic. Yes, it's my first automatic watch design for the brand that I made for it, and basically this watch was created because of our customer feedback. People asked for bigger numerals, people asked for Luminova, for better movement options and for unique straps. And that's what we did with this watch. The name is a word combination of Lume and automatic. That's why it's called Lumatic. And it's the first Sternglass watch that has a Miyota 8315 movement in it. There's the advantage of an increased power reserve of 60 hours in comparison to 38 of our standard movements. And it has a lot of movement decoration. For example, the Geneva stripes on the automatic bridge, the skeletonized rotor, and the heat-blued screws. Furthermore, what we did when we designed this dial is that we made the numerals a little bit bigger, but also add a shadow to create this 3D effect. I saw it on watches from the 80s and 90s, and we're like, man, we should bring that back,
dude,
and put Luminova.
As soon as I saw that photo, I was like, it has shadows on the numerals. I was like, that's like, I love that.
that's a first for you guys, right?
Yeah, it's definitely the first for us, and it creates depth. And this is something that I really appreciate as a designer and enthusiast of watches. When light hits the dial or the case, that every time when you look at your watch, you see a new detail. And that's what we tried to achieve with it. And of course, to put two different Luminova colors on it, one for the numerals, the beige one, but also the strong orange one for the triangle, circle, and for the hands, is something to enhance the contrast of it. There's also another small design detail. For example, at 12, the 60 is marked in red, and that's because the movement has a power reserve of 60 hours. Could have written it down at the automatic, but we wanted to have it clear and to emphasize it in this small detail. And yes. Another, also a first time for me, we developed specifically for this watch a new nylon strap, which is made out of sequel material, which is 100% recycled, and dark blue leather with contrast blue stitching. This will be a variant for the watch, and we will sell it also separately online, so you can put it on your Nars or your Hamburg case, and I think it will suit us well.
Something that you didn't include in your email is the case diameter.
Yes, it's 38 millimeters. This is the same size as the Nars.
Yeah, I figured it would be 38, 40, 42. That's where you guys kind of float around.
And so just a quick question while we're on that subject of the new watch. Is it based off of an existing model, or is it a completely refreshed design, like on the case and everything?
It uses the same case construction as our NAOS automatic model. And this was also interesting for us and something that I asked our suppliers, that the 8T215 and the 8315 share the same dimensions. So it was easy for us to swap out the movement. And when we realized that this is something that our customers appreciate, there will be NAOS and Hamburg models that will also feature this movement type.
That's awesome.
And I guess is since this is the first time you're using Miyota after your release, I mean, a lot of brands use Miyota. So this is maybe something you guys are going to kind of roll into future collections because of how easy they are to service, how easy they are to replace. I mean, they're actually really reliable. You know, Miyota,
absolutely.
The 8 series gets a lot of hate on the internet for some odd reason, because of the 9 series existing. And that is the sole reason why it gets hate. But these are decently hardy little movements. Absolutely. And they're reliable, and they run accurately, like
easy to service. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I can swap the movement for $90, you know, I don't even have to service it. And yeah, I mean, we've seen some of our friends who also use that movement and some of the other micro brands. I mean, they're getting them into COSC rated, you know, like into COSC accuracy, which is very, very easy to do according to them, you know?
Yeah, I appreciate that, and I think that also, and I mean, at that price point, you get these technical features with the extended power reserve and the finishing. You would normally pay double or triple the price to get something similar in a Swiss movement watch. Yeah. And totally, these are really reliable movements for us.
Yeah, let's transition here to so obviously you're newer to Stern Glass, but I'm sure you've seen the ups and downs of the watch industry, which happen in almost seconds, right? Nanoseconds of ups and downs. Tell us for you what has been the most rewarding part of being with a brand like Stern Glass.
For me personally, when I joined the company 2 years ago, I just finished design school, got into watches 6 years ago, and it was my goal to work in this industry. And that I had the opportunity and the luck that I found the job at Stern Glass was really something that I appreciate. And I mean, a dream came true for me that a watch enthusiast can work at a young startup company and do his first design as a working student there, because I cannot think of any watch company here in Germany where I could do that in that short amount of time. So this is something that I really like. And to bring my knowledge to the products and to the product development is something that the team really appreciates. So if they have any question about the history of watches, what kind of designs and complications there is, they can always ask me that. And I noticed that in our company that the people are more enthusiastic about the upcoming releases, because we want to try not only to be more colorful, but also be more technical and better watches with more complications to come. So customers or enthusiasts can expect this year definitely some interesting watches from us, completely new cases, new watch types. And yeah, it will be very interesting.
What trends do you guys foresee within the watchmaking industry? And you know, how do you think that Stern Glass is going to adapt to these changes?
What I realize is the innovation at movements. Like when you look 10 years ago, you were really limited what kind of movements you want to use in your watches. And now, because ATA stopped supplying the watch brands with their movements, a lot of other companies started to develop their own and to offer the opportunity to do certain dial layouts. And this is something I noticed. And the trend to color. I mean, this is something that you can, when you compare watches 10, 20 years ago and you compare today, watches became colorful because life out there is really, serious. And we need something fun on our wrist to that brings joy to us when we look at it.
Let's step back because you talked about joy. And so I know for you, joy is design. So let's talk about like the process that you go through. And we've touched very briefly on this, but walk us on the same journey that you guys take when you're designing a watch. Like, what are things that you look for? Like, how do you get inspiration? Like, what's the process? Like, how do you capture that inspiration? How do you evolve that inspiration? And then how does it eventually become something that somebody can purchase and wear?
Yeah, a really good question. I mean, when you start collecting watches privately, you get to see a lot of watches, handle them in your hands and get inspired by them. And of course, when you look back at the watch history, there are so many great designs, and it's logical that the vintage trend is so strong because back then they made these timeless designs and companies start to re-release them over and over again. But what I think to myself is, when we look back in 20, 30 years, we're like, okay, back in 2010, 2020, we wore watches that looked like watches in the 50s. But what are watches for the 21st century, for example? So for me, it's important to look, also, of course, back, get inspiration from the past, but also to put a modern twist to it, to combine these elements. For example, my first watch design I made is the Sidious sector dial design. And this is something I really liked privately. And I showed it to our design team and were like, this is something that I could imagine for a brand because it reminds of a scientific dial. And it's, although it's more Art Deco based, it shares some similarities with our design philosophy with the Bauhaus. And how can we put that two design philosophies together to create a watch at an affordable price point? Because this kind of design was really popular in the 20s and 30s. And now there are not so many brands or usually really at the high end that kind of offer this style. And my goal was to bring this style for an affordable price. And not only that it looks good, that it has the right details. For example, it has the dial with circular brushing at the hour sector and a satinized dial. But because the minutes and the seconds are divided into sectors, I wanted to use a movement that runs smoothly. And of course, we had to use a quartz movement, but I proposed the Seiko Mecha Quartz because it was the movement that would fit the design. I think a ticking quartz movement wouldn't work with this kind of design. And this is was my first design process for completing a watch. And what I tried to do is to implement the aesthetic components with the technical ones. This is really important to me, that we're not only making beautiful watches, but also what drives them suits the design.
I love personally that the new watch that you guys are going to be releasing here shortly. I like that it has, you know, like you mentioned, the shadowed numerals and things. It's all these little quirks that almost bring like a retro feel to it, but still keeping that, you know, kind of Bauhaus, you know, life inside of it, the soul to it. And, you know, for everybody watching, Bauhaus is to the watch industry what feng shui is to homes. It's just kind of like a sense of everything having a purpose and a place, you know, but still being a refreshed and refined look. But yeah, I really enjoy that. How do you see the role of, you know, Bauhaus design evolving within the watch industry in the next, you know, let's say 5 to 10 years or so?
This is an interesting question, because when you look at the prices of certain models, then it would not match the Bauhaus philosophy, because when you look from a certain perspective, we don't need any wristwatch. So these are essential luxury items. So what I really love about us, but also about other micro brands, is that they try to offer unique designs at affordable prices. And for me, Bauhaus design is not only the look, but also the philosophy behind it. And I think this is also something that drives the enthusiast community. Of course, it's good to have inspiring brands that are really with a strong heritage and to save up the money to acquire the great piece. But it's also important that we have some watches that you can buy when you save up some money after 6 months or so, or a funny watch with a yellow dial, for example, where it doesn't hurt when you pay €300 for it, in comparison to pay 3,000, 4,000 euro for a yellow dial watch. That would hurt more, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it really, I think that's what a lot of brands are losing. It's like, as they go up market, they like forget about the customers that kind of helped bring them up market. You know, it seems to be like a cat and mouse game. You know, we talked briefly about this yesterday on the phone for about an hour, but it seems to be like a cat and mouse game, because everybody wants to go up market. You know, everybody wants to, because you it's a double-edged sword, because by staying true to your ground, your entry door, your entry consumer, also turns off a lot of the bigger collectors, you know, like the huge, like collectors that have the, you know, the Pateks and the Vacherons. And I know I'm not comparing them to you, but you don't see a lot of guys who will, you know, put their Patek on one day and then put their Stern Glass on the next day, you know?
Yeah.
And it's weird, because we're in a small industry already. We're already in a niche industry. It's like, out of 100 people that you meet, maybe 2 of them are watch collectors, realistically. So we're already in the small industry, and then it's already narrowing itself by how much money you have to spend on watches. And as you go more up market, the weirdest thing is, people don't enjoy the watches as much. It seems to be a different reason why people purchase watches at that point, you know? And again, you know, going back to Stern Glass and affordability, sustainability, you know, and, you know, creating that customer journey. You know, it's really cool that you guys are just still staying where you started, at affordability. And I've noticed every time, you know, I was going on your website, and you guys love that approach to watchmaking. And then a lot of the other watchmakers are like, let me get out of this segment as quickly as I can, you know? Like, it's a shame for us to make affordable watches. What you know?
I mean, it's, you mentioned going up market. For example, this watch, the Lumatic, it's of course a little bit more expensive than our normal automatic movement. But that's because we have to offer our customers a better watch if we demand for a bigger price. So we are really value driven. And this is for me also because I'm an enthusiast myself. When I design a watch, I'm asking myself, would I buy this piece? And if no, that would be problematic, I think.
I'm not going to make it. Just throw it away. Throw it in the bin.
I could not support it myself. I have difficulties to do it.
You see the watch industry entering this danger zone. Not you, but the luxury segment of the watch industry. And you can look at the past 3 to 4 years as historical data. But you're paying more now in 2024 for the same product that was made in 2020, 2019. And you see brands that have went through 3 or 4 or 5 price increases, but they haven't improved the quality of the product. And so that is a very dangerous place to be. And you see a lot of buyers, and I mean, obviously I have a community here where I live and a watch club, and I talk to collectors every day. And a lot of collectors are in the same exact place right now where they're sitting on their hands. They're sitting on their wallet. They're not pulling out their wallet right now for that exact reason, that you're spending more. And when you get into the luxury segment, you know, 2% price increase, 3 to 4 or 5% price increase doesn't sound like much, but it becomes hundreds of dollars, you know, hundreds of dollars. And with those hundreds of dollars, you have a Stern glass, you know?
Yeah. I mean, so, there's this famous chronograph that went to the moon back then, 10 years ago. You could afford one, and now they target a completely different customer with it. I mean, it's also okay to do it because it's a strong design and a really important watch. But I think we have to keep in mind that not everybody can spend or is willing to spend that much money on something that he doesn't need. But what we want to try to do is to offer this our design philosophy at an accessible price. And of course, maybe when the watch has better features, to have a little bit bigger price, but to not exclude someone.
Yeah. And that's the way it should be. As you command more money from your consumer, you should be delivering a higher quality product. Exactly. But I just had to bring attention to that because we're in this danger zone for the watch industry and nobody talks about it. You know, nobody talks about it because we're independent. I, Justin, Lonely Wrist, and you, you know, we can say this, you know, we can talk about this, you know, and yeah, so thank you for actually, as you go up market, delivering more value and letting us get more watch for our money. So
yeah, absolutely. That's the way it should be.
I couldn't agree more.
So I'm curious, while you were kind of touching on it, Blake, and, you know, mentioning a lot of the community kind of, you know, holding onto their wallets and things. This is kind of a community question for you, Kayvon, but how does Stern Glass engage with its customers and its community, you know, such as watch enthusiasts and collectors and things like that? How do you guys have engagement with those people?
As I already mentioned, we have this, for example, post-purchase survey where customers can give us feedback to our watches, what we can improve, not only about our products, but also the buying process, the website, that they can choose different straps and kind of stuff. But also we have a Facebook group with, I think, 3,000 people in it, where they share their favorite wrist shots of our watches. And this is something that we use also in our product development, where we put design variations and the community can vote which design they prefer. And what we want to do is also to go more to the fairs this year, especially here in Germany, to get in touch with the enthusiast community, because for me it's really important, because I'm an enthusiast myself, to talk to the people, ask them, do you like the watches? What could we do better? What do you wish, for example? And this is something that I want definitely to bring more to us, to the company.
Yeah, I mean, it as a micro brand, and this is something that I've said a million times over and over, but if these upmarket brands gave the consumers what they wanted, then there might not be Stern Glass, or there might not be XYZ micro brand. So, you know, them dropping the ball has created a huge opportunity for brands like Stern Glass. And, you know, obviously the consumer, right? This is also something, I'm sounding super pessimistic, but you see a lot of the watch industry controlling the consumer, you know, and not the other way around, where, you know, your consumer approach is what powers the brand, right? And yeah, so, you know, without the community, there is no watch industry. There is no, and that's why it's important for us, you know, for our mission, and what we do, and obviously for we stress the importance to other watch brands. You know, I don't think we have to do it for you, but, you know, we've talked to watch brands before, and they're like, well, what do you think we could do to get the community involved? And I'm like, it's a shame that you have to ask this question. Yeah, just listen. But giving them the opportunity to be heard, you know, and to have a free, open communication, open dialogue. A lot of these watch brands will build up these walls between them and their consumer. And So I think if we were to have like a success playbook for the watch industry, I think Stern Glass would be there at the top of the strategy, the value, the focus, the direction, the leadership. I mean, you know what I mean? There's just a lot of cool things. And that, you know, that was one reason why we were very adamant. And, you know, I'm like the Terminator, you know, I'm not going to stop reaching out to you guys until you come on or say no. So same for Justin, but yeah, that was one reason why we felt like it was very important, because we have a lot of similarities in what we take pride on. But, you know, with that being said, we have, you know, two more questions. I don't want to keep you away from the obligations that you have from personal and from work. And so we appreciate the hour you spent with us so far. And then I guess this is a question we always ask, because this is probably one of the most important questions we will ask, but where do you see the brand heading in the next 10 years? You know, if you, and this doesn't have to be like from the corporate perspective, you know, from the team's perspective, you can come from that perspective, but in your eyes, with your vision, you know, what would you expect from a brand like Stern Glass?
This is a really good question. And sometimes I ask the team and just Dustin also this kind of question. I think I would answer it in two ways, one from a brand and one from a product perspective. I think we as a brand, I wish that in 10 years we will be bigger and more retail stores, more people know the brand and tell our story that and our approach to watchmaking. But also from a product perspective, to continue to sell accessible watches with a certain design twist, limited editions. But for me as an enthusiast, I would love to see more technical watches, watches with more complications, something that never has been done before, for example. I would love to see a jump hour Stern Vase watch, a mechanical one. A mechanical chronograph is something that's definitely on my bucket list to do. But of course, to have it accessible at an accessible price point. And this is something that is really difficult. But I mean, the best example is, for example, the GMT movements. 5 years ago, it was impossible to get one new for over for under 1,000 euro, and was an office GMT. And when you want a true GMT, you have to pay 3,000 or more for it. And now with the two options that we have with the Seiko and the Miyota, you can offer GMT watches for under 1,000 euro. And that was not possible 5 years ago. And this is something that I would like to do, to offer complications, tell the story of them, tell them why, what makes this kinds of extra functions to unique to a watch, and also to educate the customer. Because most of the customers that are new to watches, they don't know about this cool stuff that what makes watches so special and so interesting. Of course, the design is important, but the technical aspect, how does it work? And what was it used back then? And when these watches were tools, and now we have these accessories on the wrist. This is something that I would really love to do, more watch designs that push the limit.
I would like to say, and this is, I could probably go back to Justin and point back to him, but you know, Justin and I, when did we start watch collecting? I mean, it hasn't been very long. I mean, it was like 2014, 2016.
2016, yep, 2016.
So 2016, we got into the hobby together. And very quickly, I think a lot of people, like, for example, we have people that really don't know how to collect a watch. I know that sounds super weird. Like I have some people in my watch club that, you know, are like, I'm scared to be a watch collector. And it's like, why? And it's like, I don't want to do it wrong. You know, I don't want to be the wrong type of watch collector. And it's like, what does that even mean? You know, like, I don't even understand what that means. But the reason why I'm bringing this up is because, very shortly after, I mean, when did you hear about Stern Glass, Justin? It had to be right around that time, like 2018.
It was
maybe.
Probably 2018, I think. And I remember, I don't know, maybe this is a little bit later, but I remember when you guys used to have the Topograph, which was probably 2019.
I think so, yes.
So yeah, somewhere in there.
And the only reason why I'm bringing this up is because that creates another challenge and another obstacle. And I don't even think watch brands even know this. But, you know, something that I can assume Justin felt, and I have certainly felt, is a sense of like comfort. Does that sound so weird when I say it? But like, you know, you guys are not scared to say, hey, here's what you could consider as a watch collector. Here's what you could feel. Like here's the experiences you could have. Like, and you know, a lot of watch brands are also scared to make that first collector's, like that newbie collector, newbie enthusiast watch. They're scared to make that watch. But I know that sounds so weird to say. I've been sitting here like I'm sounding like an idiot. But
I'm like, where are you going with this?
I don't know. But no, it's weird because you never get that from a brand. Like you look at brands like Seiko or Citizen or Bulova or you know whatever, right? But they don't ever come from that like warm and friendly approach to buying a watch, you know. Like, am I crazy? Am I going to be tied up with the, you know, my arms behind my back and in a loony bin? But it's something that I felt like it is that you guys do. Like, you know, am I wrong?
I'll let you go ahead and speak on that, and then I'll come back to that.
I think what makes us different and other micro brands in comparison to the established brands is that we were born out of the internet era, the e-commerce era, where you can directly sell to the customer and get directly the feedback. When you look at the other established companies, when they were founded 100 years ago or even older, it was a completely different time back then to get the watches. For example, they sold the watches to jewelers and jewelers sold the watches to the clients. So the watch companies didn't have any contact with their customers. Today, completely crazy to think about it. And of course, when the company is older, you have established a certain company culture and structures that makes it difficult to them to break out. And because we are such a young company, and I think we have 15 people, the communication is really short. For example, if I realize that something is in danger or doesn't work, we can change it really quickly. And this I think is the advantage of smaller independent brands, that they can get the receive the feedback directly, have a closer relationship to the customer, and as you said, a more friendlier and not this high end approach where you have to go to a jewelry store and ask them, "Can I see the watch, please?" So we are friendly. Can I touch it? We show the watch. Yeah, exactly.
I think, I was going to say, I think the big thing, and this is what I've noticed too, Blake, and I know you kind of mentioning this, I think the term that you used was like, it's kind of cold feeling, like, you know, stirring glass, you purchase a watch.
Gray.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're like, oh, like there's so much like warmth and like friendliness that comes with this. I personally believe that, especially since it is, I don't want to say a smaller company. You guys aren't small, of course, but it has a more intimate feel because of Dustin leading the company and also pretty much being portrayed in almost everything that they do. Whenever you go to their website, you're seeing Dustin's face, you're seeing the team, you're seeing an About Me page, you're getting these little, you know, these implications of it's somebody real who's actually giving you a watch compared to you know, going on, you know, another watch's website and just clicking the add to cart and not really seeing that friendliness and that warmness. That was something I immediately noticed from them since day one, is like Dustin's not afraid to show his face. You know, if you go on Twitch and you watch a streamer, 9 times out of 10, you're going to have a more positive feedback and more community impact if you're showing your face on a stream compared to just being off camera. So I think it goes a long way, kind of having that personal touch.
It's like it creates that sense that he's with you on the journey, and he's showing you like it's okay. Like I'm gonna be here for you at Stern Glass. You know.
Tell you what. Next time I buy a Stern Glass, I want Dustin there with me.
Yeah, hand deliver it, Dustin. We expect it. But no,
I would like to add is that, as you mentioned, that we have this close approach to our customers. We have in our team 3 people that are only for communication and service. If people, new customers have questions, they can just text to us a WhatsApp or email. I can phone us to see that they are real people and we can answer your questions. And we have an open ear. For the feedback, and yeah, we try to show that in our marketing, of course.
You guys started where a lot of brands die, and I say that because if you look at the original approach to selling a watch and to be a watch brand is, you know, of course you develop the product, then you go to the jewelers and say, hey, I hope that you'll help me get the product in front of, you know, the purchasers, the buyers, the whatever. But you've seen that strategy now people like brands walking back that strategy, right? By opening their own boutiques, because, and I don't know if I said this to you or whoever I said this to, but I say a lot of stuff to a lot of people. But if I buy a Stern glass from XYZ Jewelers, I'm not a Stern glass customer. I'm an XYZ Jewelers customer. I have purchased your product by way of XYZ Jewelers, and they own that relationship.
Just as like an AD works.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's the reason why you see these brands developing in-house movements, for one, because, you know, it's not like a watchmaker at your corner, you know, or in your neighborhood, or your local watchmaker can service those watches or get parts for those watches. And then it creates that loop of like, then they're stuck going back to the brands, you know. But from you, you know, you started off on the same journey as the customer, and you know, you're not having to sit there and walk back like, oh, well, let us start opening our own boutiques and let us start making in-house calibers and figuring out these little sneaky ways to take back the customers that they realized were never theirs. You know? Yeah. And so, like I said, it's a weird industry. It's a very weird industry. And I mean, I've been in the industry for a while now. And it's just these weird little things that I notice. So more claps for you guys.
Thank you.
But I guess our final thing that we always like to do is, you know, we appreciate, of course, you know, we've already said that we appreciate you being here, but we would like to turn our platform over to you. And this is your opportunity to speak directly to our listeners. And we went through a bunch of stuff here, but is there anything that you would like to say directly to our listeners? Maybe we didn't talk about it. Maybe you have something that you feel. Maybe you just want to say thank you. I mean, whatever it is.
Open mic.
Here is your open mic opportunity to speak to our listeners.
Thank you for the opportunity, and thank you for listening to this great podcast. What you can expect from us, from Stern Glass, is that we provide good quality watches and at an accessible price. And you can expect this year more product innovations from us very soon in the upcoming months. Something that we developed in the last 2 years when I started the company, when I joined the company. And I'm really excited to see the reactions and to receive the feedback.
And we will make sure we plug all your socials in our description. And you know, obviously, we're going to let people know how they can communicate with you. I am not Stern Glass support. Justin is not Stern Glass support. Of course, we will be happy to answer questions, but you know, we'll make sure that we can plug you guys so we know our listeners. Sure. And this is, like I said, this has been one that's been a long time coming for us. I think, you know, here we are, I don't know, 14 or 15 podcasts in. I mean, we're not old, but we're not new. But this was one that, if I can speak freely, you know, this is one that we wanted from a very, very, very early
time. Yeah, I've looked forward to this one for a long time.
Yeah, I can say the same safely. And I know that that I don't own a Stern Glass. But you know, obviously seeing my best friend Justin being so passionate about your brand has made his impression on me. And it's a brand that I've always had you know, my eyes on. And I'm still waiting to figure out, because I'm a very slow burn when it comes to buying a watch, you know. Like, I think obsessively about what I want to buy. And And yeah, you know, I'm one of those people too, where, you know, I need to get hands on with something. Like a part of the experience and the journey of buying a watch is the sensation that the watch provides to me, you know, which is impossible over the internet. And, you know, thankfully these watch shows are popping up that you guys can, you know, you've talked about attending, where you can create that sensation. Cause I don't even think I've seen your Stern Glass. I don't even think I've held your Stern Glass, Justin.
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. That's a shame. I mean, we live on the other side. Yeah. We live on the other side of the country though. So, I mean, it's not like I can just ring his doorbell and borrow a Stern Glass, you know?
I'll ship it to you.
But yeah, mail it to me. But yeah, I mean, that's a part of the experience that I'm looking forward to you guys doing for sure. Cause and you guys know this. I mean, this is not top secret company, you know, information, right? This is something that a lot of people expect, you know, and the reason why ADs is their main source and retailers. And, you know, you guys have considered and known this. So it's something that I'm really looking forward to, you know, to getting hands on with a timepiece from Stern Glass. So,
yeah, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you and to your audience. I really appreciate it to introduce myself to the world, to the watch community, and that people can see that the people behind these companies are also enthusiasts. And yeah, thank you very much.
We're here with you, and we're on. yeah. Thank you. We're certainly walking this journey with you, you know, for sure. So and you know, in the future, our audience can expect, you know, I'm sure you can, you know, loop us in on your press outlets, and you know, we can start, you know, making sure people know about what you're working on, what you're releasing beyond this podcast, and yeah, we're certainly going to be walking on the same journey in the future for sure. All right, guys, we have taken way too much time from Kayvon and the Stern Glass brand. So thank you for those of you that made it to the end. Obviously, if there's anybody, and this is our open call, we've never done this either. If there's anybody out there listening that wants to see a certain brand come on, let me or the Terminator, Justin, know, because we will find them and we will bring them onto this podcast. So
that's right.
So thank you again, everybody. We will see you on the next episode. And until then, never have a lonely wrist.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Kayvon.
Thank you, guys.
See ya.